This is Laura Deirdre with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Eric Summers, Chief Medical Officer at Atrium Health Wake Forest Baptist, part of Advocate Health. Dr. Summers, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I'm looking forward to our discussion. I know there's so much happening in healthcare right now, and in particular, it's a fascinating time for clinical care to just see some of the different trends and the way technology has evolved as well. But before we dive into that discussion, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Yeah, sure. I'm a hospitalist by training. I've been in medicine as a physician for 24 years. Through my hospitalist experiences, I got into administration and system change, and I've been CMO here for 6 years, and it's been a great experience. So.
Well, that's excellent, and definitely, really cool to see how you've taken your career from a hospitalist now to leading, a team of physicians as a chief medical officer. I'm wondering, especially given so much has been changing over the past few years, could you talk about one change in particular that you have made that has yielded some great results?
Yeah, we've done a lot of good things here, but there's one that is. One that really has stood out for me, and it's because I've seen how it's impacted our staff, and that is we've put a lot of work into workplace violence and initiatives to mitigate that. And the reason that's top of mind is, we didn't pre-COVID, I mean, it was important, but we didn't have a structure like we do now. And so patients, we're about patients, patient care, needs of the patient come first. That's always kind of been my mantra, and it still is. But post-COVID, I realized that our staff are just as important, and keeping them safe, supporting them is critical. And so we have a process now in place with behavior alerts, and more importantly, administrators like myself, when there is an issue at the bedside and a patient who is able to make their own decisions and making poor decisions with regards to physical violence or mental violence. You know, myself or one of my colleagues will go to the bedside and talk to that patient and set expectations. You know, we care about our patients, but we have to support our staff. And the thing that's really gratifying that I didn't realize until doing this was how important that was for our staff. You know, the perception, well, that, the leaders don't understand or they don't care. But when you're at the bedside and you're there and they see that we're a team and we're going to support each other, that has just been very gratifying because this is a tough job. Medicine is very tough. But, doing things to help our staff is it's just the right thing. And so I'm just really proud of that. I'm proud of what we've done. And actually our number of workplace violence events has dropped by 20% since we did this initiative over the last 2 years. And we have a workplace violence leader. So yeah, that just is something that I'm very proud of for my organization.
That's amazing to hear. And as you mentioned, such an important aspect of leading the clinical teams is making sure, people feel safe in their actual protocols and measures in place so they know what to do if violence does occur. So that seems like something I hear day in and day out from healthcare executives as they're thinking through, top priorities is being able to create those programs and respond appropriately. So thank you for laying that out for us.
One quick thing I want to throw in. If there's one thing I could recommend for every organization out there is to emphasize, have your leaders be present at the bedside. Have your CMO, your CNO, your president come to the bedside for those cases. That makes a world of difference. That was a game changer for us.
Yeah, I can imagine, it really, the team feels the support from your presence and the leadership's presence there. And from your perspective, when you're going into those situations, what is it that like for you? How do you really, approach those situations so you can diffuse them?
So yes, it's not something I learned in medical school, that's for sure. But and the first few times it was a little nerve-wracking, but now since I've become a experienced at it, what I'd say is that it's actually one of the most enjoyable things I do, and it's not just for our staff. But when I walk in that room, usually people are saying, "Watch out, this is going to be tough. Do you want security? Do you want, you know?" And I almost always say no. And what I've learned from these crucial conversations are that patients are, when they're angry, when they're doing things like that, work, you know, physical violence, a large proportion of the issue is a patient doesn't know what's going on and wants to know the issues, why they're there, their treatment plan. And the other is they want to be heard. They want to be acknowledged, their viewpoint. And so I often, the first thing I've got to do, I've got to connect as a human. I need patients to see my eyes and know that I care about them, because I do, even in those situations. And so I care and we connect, and then I listen. And then I give the perspective of the hospital, and then have maybe some difficult conversations that this can't continue, but we want to support, you know, we want to support the patients as much as our staff. And I will tell you, 95% of the time, that works. That's the secret recipe. I'm not gonna lie, 5% of the time, there's nothing that I can that works. But people want to be heard. They want to be respected. They want you to listen to them, and they want you to care, and they want you to communicate. And that's what I try to do. And because it's successful, because the staff appreciates it, it's actually one of the more enjoyable things I do now.
That's really amazing to hear. And certainly, you know, I appreciate you giving those pointers because, like you said, it's not something that always comes naturally or that, you know, has really been taught in the traditional medical schools. But having that ability to take real steps that are meaningful and connect to patients person to person and de-escalate those situations, I can imagine does wonders and also, like you said, supports the staff as well. So that's really cool to hear. Now, what are some of the other top trends that you're following in healthcare right now? What's really top of mind for you?
Well, boy, there's a lot of things. You know, from the acute aspects, I mean, you know, workforce shortages in healthcare and how we keep our staff together. Certainly, what I talked about with workplace violence, that's a component of you know, improving staff satisfaction. But you know, reducing that labor that is you know, locums. We need to keep our we need to have staff here that is connected and engaged and with our mission, and you know, for not just our culture, but for, you know, cost containment. And so that's something we've been working on, and we've been making strides on. But you know, other things, you know, kind of the latest artificial intelligence, you know, we certainly are looking at that, and how can AI, you know, change medicine? How can it transform our operations, make us more efficient, make the patient experience better? And we're noticing some small successes, but you know, taking it to that next level. And that may not be something we see in the next year, but that's very, there's a lot of optimism there that that can, you know, transform what we're doing now. Get the doctor or the healthcare professional away from the computer and more time with the patient. You know, how can we use our analytics to generate revenue? I mean, you know, as we all know, the bottom lines are a little bit tighter than they used to be. And what can we do to generate value from our data in this challenging cost environment? How can we get ac how can we maximize our access? We're doing some great things with access, continuing to improve, but the environment in medicine has changed over the last few years. Consumers have more options, you know, these private equity entities, and you know, we need to listen to our consumers even more, patient-centered, give them what they want. And you know, without that access, without that improvement, that's going to impact our ability to fulfill our mission. And so, you know, we're looking at key service lines to grow. And but yeah, I mean, it's really all these things are about improving the patient experience, the employee experience, and maximizing our margin and bottom line.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know that it can sometimes be a balance, as you were talking about, in terms of figuring out how to deliver the great outcomes while understanding the financial realities and knowing, you know, what can be helpful from the clinical perspective in that regard. And then too, thinking about the patient experience, I know there's so much that has happened. It seems like even in the last 2 years, as focus zeroes in on, you know, what patients are looking for within their healthcare journey and when they're approaching and needing care, you know, really there's a lot that can be done to make it a better experience and achieve better outcomes. And so I think it's really interesting to hear, you know, from your perspective, the work that you and your teams are doing in that space. Is there anything that you're looking at right now and are excited about when you think about growth and development over the next 12 to 24 months or so?
Well, I mean, we just need to grow, and we need to grow in key areas. I guess one thing that excites me personally, and it's you know, I went into this for patients, you know, like most in healthcare. I mean, we love patients, and we want to help. And so there's not only improvement of access and growth and all those things that we're trying to do, but the other one, and I'm really proud that our enterprise has emphasized this, is closing the gaps in health equity. And, you know, the groups, lower socioeconomic status, et cetera, I mean, getting them the health care, the same health care that everyone else is getting, they all deserve the same. We want that equity, and it's, you know, certainly something. I've been involved in different initiatives and different health systems over the years, but I'm really excited with some of the things Advocate Health's doing to improve those gaps, and, you know, engaging with the community and drilling down certain patient groups. That's just important and why we do this. And you know, and on a personal level, I'm happy to share this. I grew up myself in a very poor environment. Low socioeconomic status, struggled to not just see a physician, but groceries, get groceries. You know, I remember that. I remember those times. And I don't want anyone to have to go through that. You know, I mean, that's, yeah, just really proud that we are working hard and emphasizing that part of medicine.
Absolutely. I think it's so meaningful and definitely, as you mentioned, from experience, know how important it is when you have somebody looking out for you and making sure that, you know, when you might not have otherwise had access naturally to healthcare and some of the different services and resources as others. And so, you know, I think it's really powerful to bring that perspective into the role that you have as a physician and then to your work as chief medical officer and thinking about health equity. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. Are there any of the projects or initiatives that, you know, kind of have been really impactful already on the community or anything that you want to share that, you know, you've thought, you know, really made a difference so far?
You know, I think we have a good group working on social determinants of health and those areas. You know, I would just say off the top of my head, I can't think of a specific project, but I would say broadly, you know, and this goes back to my own personal experiences. You can build all sorts of processes, but at the core, you have to have trust. And you know, I remember back in those days being scared, my family being scared to see a healthcare provider because of you know, cost and, you know, and we didn't have much money, and that never should have been a barrier. If people aren't coming to see you, then you can't design, in my opinion, a process that's going to work. That's the first step. And so, you know, I think broadly our teams are really trying to bridge that trust gap through our churches, through the community. And yeah, I think that's the, you know, these things are very complex. There's many things you have to work through, but I think that's a key step. And I know that we have initiatives that are improving that. And, you know, so that's an example of, my own bias for my own life versus, and translating that to some of our initiatives.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Summers, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been such a fantastic conversation. We covered a lot of ground and, you know, really helpful to see from your perspective some of the great work that you're doing. So thank you for being here with us today. I appreciate our conversation and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
All right. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you talking with me. Take care.